What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
Flip, aka Flip_BTCMag on Twitter. He does stuff at Bitcoin Magazine, right now managing technical and webmaster responsibilities amongst other things in operations, podcasting and moderating at Bitcoin 2021, and the lead on the Earn Carrot app. Flip, welcome to the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. How are you?
Man, I'm excited to be here. It's an exciting day. Today is, I don't know what day this is air, but this is a very exciting day in Bitcoin. If you're a Bitcoin hater or a Bitcoin lover, I think this day is going to bring you a little bit of joy somewhere in your life.
Yeah, man. It was a wild day. We've been looking for I'm just speaking in the euphemism there, but 10K days, and we got 10K green candles in both directions within like 8 hours.
Yeah.
So talk about a wild ride.
A lot of phone calls today.
Yeah, definitely a lot of phone calls. I think Bitcoin Twitter like is very different from the signal you get on the text and the phone calls. What was it like for you today?
So today I was not in the office, which is good because days like this in the office are extremely distracting, right? So here, BTC Inc., of course, we're planning Bitcoin 2021. So that's like the number one thing that's going on. We're very excited, of course, about the conference, but we also have interns in. So they're like learning about Bitcoin and they're seeing this stuff and they're going, oh shit, should we be freaking out? Like, what is this? You know, how does this work, guys? Like, is this the end? And it's so funny because when you work with a team that's generally on the Bitcoin maximalist side of things, right? Mm-hmm. Not everybody's a maximalist. Okay. Of course, there's varying degrees of that and all that kind of good stuff. But when you have new people in the office, it's very interesting, like these questions that they kind of come up with, because I didn't think anything of it. I just smashed by. Like, I'm just like, okay, let's do it. I mean, it also comes with being in the industry for a while. It happens. Do you wish you could time the market? Probably, right? Do I really want to pay cap gains? Do I really want to go through all this other shit? No. Is it going to come back? Yeah.
Right.
We're dealing with, you know, the number one technological invention of your or my life.
Sure.
Who gives a shit?
Yeah,
it's a place.
Definitely zoom out on that front. But what do you make of the day's current events and the narratives around Elon and Michael Saylor coming out and saying he's buying and holding forever?
Yeah. So Elon's an interesting one. We've had kind of an internal debate, which I think I'm actually relatively on my own island here with. And that's the question I positioned a lot of people was, is Elon actually a bad actor or is he learning in public? And I think he's learning in public. I think his overconfidence is troubling 100%. I do think he sounds a lot like a Roger right now. I think he's working through some of the stuff, but every maximalist has gone through this. I don't know if we're willing to all admit that on Twitter of what day we decided that, you know, we had to go through the conversation with ourselves or like, are bigger blocks better? Should we make this faster? Like how, like, is this too expensive? Like, how do we save the world? Like, why are we here?
Right.
And every maximalist has gone through this struggle at some point in some way. So I want to say that it's learning in public on the Bitcoin side. On the Dogecoin side, that's just straight up manipulation. Like, he thinks he's having fun, but I mean, two of the phone calls that I did feel today were from people who are on dog coins, either a Shiba, you know, coin or whatever the fuck it is, and a Dogecoin. And those are annoying conversations. They're hard conversations, right? Because they do look to Elon to be smarter than them. They do look to me to be smarter than them. However, for whatever reason, I've been doing this a lot longer, but Elon just somehow trumped me in the, you know, whose opinion is more important. So it's okay. So I hope to see Elon mature and grow and come to love Bitcoin as we love it and see the progress, the effort, the community for what it really is and for how big it really is. It's not about the memes on the internet. And I think a lot of people get caught up, toxic maximalists get caught up in memeing and stuff like that, and people give them shit. I think toxic maximalists is great. It's a subsect. I don't necessarily count myself in there, but I totally get where we're coming from. He will come around to it, and hopefully he's not too toxic, because he'll blow it up. And he's like, I don't know. He's still Anakin. We got a little bit of time. He's still got all of his limbs. He hasn't killed all the Jedi kids yet, but it's probably coming soon.
Right. Well, it's great to get some levity and perspective there. You know, I'm thinking that, you know, one thing that's great about Bitcoin is we don't really have to put our faith in any one person. We really can look to ideas. Totally. And the ideas, I think, are bigger than the people. And, you know, I think it's interesting that going through this during this current phase of this cycle, whether people are reacting to what I felt looked like coordinated FUD, or are they reacting just purely to price movement? And what would be the reaction be if there wasn't the narratives that we hear right now, and we just had wild volatility like we all kind of expect on this ride? And I wonder, with your in your current position, like, what is it like reflecting with your coworkers? And what I'm really getting out there is, like, reflecting with Bitcoin maximalists on days like today. Have you guys had a chance to kind of talk to some of your coworkers? We don't have to get into who, but, like, do you guys talk, you know, in the moment? And are you looking forward to catching up with them later on? And have you gotten any interesting perspective there?
Yeah, we definitely talk about it. I mean, it's hard not to, especially in when it's very bullish or very bearish, right? It's very distracting and hard to work in the office because we spend so much time doing it. And it's like, it's a perk 100%. When there's interesting things happening that are technological, like let's take Taproot activation. Mm. Being able to call or text or Slack or DM or whatever you want to do it, one of the coworkers, like Aaron Van Weerdem, is on my team. Okay, Aaron's not a technical person, but Aaron, there's no better person other than Aaron in this world at distilling extremely technical things for normal people. Mm. So being able to have that conversation around the nuances of Taproot activation is pretty profound. And it gives us definitely a perspective internally that we all kind of get to sit back and chew on and kind of regurgitate back out. So, you know, thank God we're not all on, you know, Twitter all the time and having the conversations in public. But you do see a lot of it. CK is pretty popular and out there on Twitter. Nick, of course, is out there. Dylan, who's new to the team, has been blowing up. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of people that are having those conversations that happen inside. They get churned around and then they get spit back out, like in kind of a cohesive thought. Not to say that Nick and Dylan and CK aren't extremely brilliant and extremely smart Bitcoiners, but you know, it is helpful to have the rest of us 100% and kind of work through this. David Bailey, I'd say David, our CEO, he's been definitely more popular. Or doing more like press podcasts, stuff like that. He did Stephen Rivera's show. And that was the first podcast I think he did. Yeah, he did yours. Yeah.
These
are like the first podcast he did in a year or two. I mean,
he's like, an incredible voice.
Yeah, incredible voice. Right. He's super bullish. Mm-hmm. He's very prescient, very right mm-hmm. about a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And net, this company is run by Bitcoiners. I have a background in the media space. Like, I'm like the outsider. I'm actually came from media into this. I'm a developer first. I've written code my entire life, but I went ad tech and pub tech into proper media and then came over to BTC Inc. And so David Bailey is not a media person. He's a Bitcoiner who likes to throw Bitcoin parties. That's what we're doing. That's I think, in fact, if you go back to Bitcoin 2019, when we threw that. So we internally, I think we kind of see this as a continuation of the Bitcoin conference series that the Bitcoin Foundation put on. It's not a direct, there's not a direct lineage. There's no direct people who worked on both of them or anything like that. But we knew that it needed to exist again. And so we did it. It's that simple. And when we showed up to San Francisco for B19, we had no idea it was going to be as killer of an event as it was. We just knew we wanted to have a good time with our friends, right? Do hood rat things with our hood rat Bitcoin friends. 2020 didn't happen. It's going to be 700 plus days that we have been planning this event for B2021. I cannot wait because it's going to have that same vibe of just like, let's get our Bitcoin friends together and talk about Bitcoin. You look at the lineup. I literally had tears in my eyes from seeing so many great Bitcoiners out there. We can kind of get into maybe some of my opinions on some of these people speaking. I know crypto Twitter or Bitcoin Twitter likes to pick single things out. But on the whole, if you look at this, the contributions that will happen on these different stages to Bitcoin, Bitcoin wouldn't be the same without these people. And I know you said Bitcoin isn't one person. We're talking hundreds of people who are pushing Bitcoin. They are putting their life out there. They are putting their names out there. They're like, there's nothing that they are leaving on the field. They are putting it all, like they are putting it all out there for you. And so I hope that Bitcoin 2021 has the impact that I think we are emotionally ready for at the team. B21 snuck up on us, or B19, sorry, snuck up on us. Mm. It was just dope when we got there. Bitcoin 21, I know it's going to be pretty amazing. So, like, I'm very excited. Like, Max Kaiser and Michael Saylor are going to be on stage. We could have an entire conference around that one 45-minute hour, 30 minutes, however long it is, and just hang out for the rest of the time.
Yeah,
it would be the best thing we've ever done.
Yeah,
Max is so great. So anyways.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to make of the conference. I think it's one of those things that that in life that you almost truly enjoy the looking forward to it more than you could possibly enjoy being there. And I mean that in the sense that it's going to fly by and I'm going to make it's almost going to be like it's such win-win choices that it's almost going to feel like a little bit. I don't want to say lose-lose, but I'm going to have to choose between like staying in the conversation I'm engrossed in, enjoying the party, or do I run in and see Michael Saylor and Max Kaiser shoot the shit? And then it's going to be choices like that all day long. And my whole goal for the thing is to stay in the moment and just enjoy what's the first event in, you know, a year for most people. And I want to ask you, what's it like with what, you know, what could feel like a lot of pressure and all eyes kind of on this event?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely feel the pressure. I think we learned a lot of lessons from B19. I mean, that conference was thrown by like six dudes sitting around. I mean, it's crazy. And even on B2021, the core team, I'm not part of the core team. So like one of the things I'm doing, I'm running the Mt. Gox esports arena. It's basically a fourth stage. I mean, we've got dedicated square footage. We've got 10 games set up. We've got a Bitcoin worth of prizes. We've got so many activations going on just within our area. You'll see it. There's lights everywhere and it's a big warehouse. Like it's going to be noisy and it's going to be fun. You're going to come and hang out and learn about Bitcoin gaming and Lightning and all that kind of good stuff. And that's just one tiny piece of it. The other core people, it's still only a 10 core people really working on this. And what we did is we really augmented the team with additional great staff that's coming in contract basis, that really knows Miami, that really knows the event space. Mana Wynwood is a massive property. We've shutting down streets. We've got multiple bars and areas taken over. I mean, it's like a third, maybe almost a half a mile wide worth of stuff. And I think everyone's expecting to come to a conference. Like we don't call it a conference internally. We call it a festival, right?
Right.
There's sumo wrestlers at the fucking thing. When was the last time you went to Consensus? Sorry, Consensus, and had sumo wrestling.
Right.
When did you have Lamar going out and throwing down on a basketball court with other Bitcoiners and just having a good time? And then you go and you check in on your boy Max and see if he lit the stage on fire.
Right.
Right. And then you go and play some Bitcoin games and you win some stacks, some sats. And then you get to go and talk to a lot of these companies who are trying to introduce themselves to the Bitcoin community as well. Right. Like, There are going to be brands there that not every, especially on the maximum size, not everybody's excited by. I absolutely know that. I can write them on a list. These are companies that are trying to reprove themselves, I think, in a lot of cases. Mm. And I think it's also just like a small handful of people. The rest of them there know what the fuck is going on, know that Bitcoin is king. Everybody does. everybody knows that what we're doing is the number one thing. So I think, anyways, going back to it, it's really a festival. People are going to have a ton of fun. It is the FOMO, the lose-lose part, I absolutely feel. During Bitcoin 2019, we had Edward Snowden dial in and speak.
Right.
I was at the front door doing registration, and I had to sit there. So I streamed it on my phone. Right. I'm in tears. Again, I cry like all the time. I'm a little baby. Mm-hmm. I get super emotional about this stuff. Like, we are changing the world. Like, this is what I do all day. I sit here and I think about how to make the world better. And it's like little things, but that's what we do.
Yeah.
We try to popularize people who are trying to change the world and move us into the future and move us into this world of hyper Bitcoinization. So I'm extremely lucky. The FOMO is real. You will miss 1,000 opportunities that you wish you would have not missed out on, but you will have gained 10,000 of those opportunities, because there are 10,000 people that are going to be at this conference. There are going to be 10,000 different Bitcoiners with new perspectives from you to learn from. And so come, you know, open-minded, come live in the moment. I think that's a great way to be, and you're going to have a blast.
Yeah. What I'm kind of curious, what speakers that you are looking forward to? And what I mean by that is, I mean, it's obviously an incredible lineup. Maybe there are some lesser known speakers that you're keen on. Or are there even like some the bigger ones that you just like, yeah, I do want to see them. They're huge. And I want to see that.
Yeah. So actually, I'll tell you this. Yes, I have a favorite. It is not currently listed up there yet. Fair. So I cannot say it. It will be everyone's favorite. Let me put it that way. I'll tease it with a... There's a reason it's not listed yet, because when you find out, you're going to have wanted to be there type thing. And we want to save some surprises. So if you get excited by, you know, Tony Hawk, I like Tony Hawk. I'm excited Tony Hawk's there. If you get excited by Michael Saylor, I think Michael Saylor is great. I think he deeply understands Bitcoin and he regurgitates information very well. I don't mean that in like a negative way. I think he's very articulate about it.
Yep.
We've got senators, we've got, there's some other, government leader type people that are there, but not speaking. There is tens of billions of dollars of wealth and money there looking at the future. It's just hard not, it is hard to pick something, but there is this one thing. And when you find out, you will go back to this podcast and you'll go, wow, Flip was extremely correct. And no wonder he could not say anything on that stream. Like, so we'll get there.
Yeah.
Other than that, I like developer stuff. I'm also moderating a panel, and I'll go in and show my panel real quick.
Yeah.
It's going to be an interesting one. Ray Youssef, Ivan Soto, right, and Bobby Lee. And it's going to be interesting, A, because Bobby and ballet, I think, is interesting. And the private, I don't know if you know ballet or not, but the idea that you basically are selling private keys. I think it's bass backwards personally, but I have heard from other people that they use it as a way to give Bitcoin, and they feel safe because they have a copy of the private key. It's totally in the antithesis of what we're talking about.
Right.
But if that is a potential onboarding strategy that works, then who am I to question it?
Yeah.
Bitcoin isn't decided by me. And if these people think it's good, then that's okay, because at least they're getting in and they're going to learn what's happening. I think it can go off the rails. I don't think it's the solution that I would pick. Bobby's done that. Bobby's been around for a long time. He's going to have some interesting perspectives. Ivan's over at MoonPay. They're new to the scene. I'm interested to hear what he says. I don't know him very well. So that's going to be really great. And then, of course, Ray Youssef. He's trying to take over the entire continent of Africa. So how could you not be excited about hearing his experiences? So in fact, I'm pretty sure he's going to try to take over the whole thing, because the man has so much to say. And we only have 30 minutes for everyone to get that kind of piece in. So, you know, that's going to be about scaling Bitcoin to 1 billion people. I'm really excited about that. And then on our end, you know, I work on Carrot, which is basically our way to give sats out to people. I can talk through it if you want to or not, but the idea is basically we're a layer on top of Lightning that gives people the way to send Bitcoin in a pretty familiar way, which is text message codes, basically. So you can text it. You can read out codes on Clubhouse. You can put them in YouTubes. You could do it on radio. You could do it on television. And you can find a way to create a Bitcoin faucet, basically, to give your audience sats. That's pretty powerful, right? I can say, hey, go to this app, type in 123XYZ. You're going to get some sats. Thanks for listening today. And so we want to productize that and put campaigns around that so that you can earn sats for, let's say, we'll take Joe Rogers, one of our guys. Sure. He has Bitcoin. He has Words, which is a great newsletter where he wraps up a bunch of different stuff. If you read five of his emails, why don't you get some sats on the sixth one? Thanks for being a part of the community.
Right.
And the reason this all started was because I wanted Coinbase to pay for core devs. Okay. And so I said, how do we get Coinbase to start paying more core devs? And I really sat here and said, oh, no, there is entire communities that want to reward their, like the brands want to be a part of that community and reward the members of that community for doing things that are valuable to each other. Mm. So for instance, let's say it's Arbor Day and Chick-fil-A, I love Chick-fil-A, wants to give everyone $1 to buy some seeds to plant some trees. How does that happen? That can't happen in the PayPal fiat world. Lightning is perfect for that. So we need to figure out how to make it palatable and give the rules and the redemptions and not deal with Lightning and payment channels and all this other shit and liquidity. Liquidity is a huge problem for Chick-fil-A. We just need to strap in, take their Bitcoin and disperse it, right? So we're hopefully here to automate that. Again, I come from the ad tech, pub tech world, right? So I want to create these opportunities for brands to go in and reward communities directly. Stop advertising to them and start doing something. Deploy your capital more efficiently directly to the end people in the community that can make a difference. Why show ads? They're inefficient. The whole thing's a scam. Half your money goes evaporating to these tech systems that don't do anything. So let's deploy some real money to real people doing real things. And that's why Carrot exists, right? And I think it definitely, it's custodial, it takes, but it's, we'll get to a non-custodial state too. And it's meant to take the edge off of it for these brands and fit into their marketing campaigns. And I'm very blessed that I happen to work at a media company that is willing to support technology investments. And I work at a media company that is squarely in the middle of a financial revolution. So that's pretty dope, to say the least. So we got big plans and big ambitions. You'll see us in a big way at the Carrot Conference. It'll look kind of like a faucet. This is just version 0.10. We've got a long way to go with what we're looking at.
Yeah. How do you deal with like thinking through personally, even like, you know, at Bitcoin 2021, there's going to be brands, there's going to be people. There's going to be people behind those brands that are kind of like, yeah, the market will decide if these things are good, in fact, or if they're less good or even dubious. And how do you think through that, even as a moderator?
Yeah, as a moderator, it's about giving people rope to hang themselves, right? Like everyone will make up. It's not my job to make up everyone's opinion, especially as a moderator. Like, and I've moderated a couple different events and stuff like that. You've got to give everyone the platform and the rope to hang themselves and lead the conversation, of course, towards an outcome at the end of that everyone walks away and going, I learned something. I know how, for instance, we're going to get to a billion Bitcoiners. And I know what Ray or Bobby's or Ivan's or Flip's direction is going to be, right? And you know if you're okay with that. You know if you're willing to support that. And so I basically come, I try to live my life not from the negative, but from the positive. So I don't really worry about too much about people that I don't like, but I worry a lot about people I do like. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I really want to support people that I do like. And that's we want to give everyone that opportunity to hear these different voices. Now, there's also voices out there that I think are just completely garbage. I think there's people that are just bad actors. I think there's people that are actively hurting Bitcoin. And we've tried to obviously stay away from any of those people. And I think that's where we kind of run into issues like, are the Winklevoss actually bad actors or not? And I think that that's up for debate. Like, I'm not saying they are or they aren't. I think they're probably a net positive. I don't think they're actively trying to hurt Bitcoin. I think they are muddying the waters. I think they're diluting the strength of Bitcoin 100%, and they're in a position of where they don't have to do that, and they shouldn't have done that. But net net, it's going to take a lot of people and a lot of different flavors to get to a billion to get to hyper Bitcoinization.
Right. Yeah.
And I can't control them all. Sorry, but I can support the ones that I really really like, and then give the other ones enough rope to hang themselves. Otherwise,
yeah, the net net discussion and cost benefit analysis is where I think it really comes down and the line gets drawn, and sort of like the, you know, where we all kind of maybe think through for ourselves, but there are definitely the extremist factions on both sides, and you know, I think Bitcoin Twitter, it's really interesting the hardcore voices there and where they draw the line, and I haven't really disagreed too much, but it's very interesting.
And I don't either too. And that's the thing. Like we even have different opinions. Like I have 100% yelled in meetings about people. It's okay. That's how it works. Like,
well, it must be fun to be passionate at work.
100%. You know, like, right. 100%.
Yeah. I want to ask you about the Mount Gox tent or area or stage, as maybe the fourth stage. So kind of tell me what's going on there. And, you know, maybe from the perspective of someone who's not, you know, familiar with like what gaming is happening on Lightning and what could be going on in there.
So we got a lot of great stuff going on. So Mt. Gox is a consortium, not really a consortium, it's less informal than that, but it's like a group of all the Bitcoin developers get together and they run tournaments once a month. And they usually have some prizes. So Zebedee is a big sponsor of that, and Zebedee is, in fact, the sponsor of this area. Zebedee, if you're not familiar with them, is a Lightning wallet, is how most people know them. They do QR codes for streamers and make it really easy. They also have a voucher program very similar to Carrot. But most importantly, they have an SDK, a software developer kit, for games to be able to plug Bitcoin into their games. And they came out with a product called Infuse that they have unleashed into the Counter-Strike Go community that allows you to infuse Bitcoin into Counter-Strike, which is pretty cool. So it works easily. You shoot someone, you get sats. You get shot, you lose sats. It's just like that, right? And so to have that type of native integration into one of the most popular video games that's ever existed is pretty, pretty powerful. And so there's also going to be Satoshi Games. Satoshi Games does Light Knight, I think, most famously. They've got some, of course, other games and things that they're working on, the Carlos is. Jack from Thunder Games, as of right now, can't make it because of UK restrictions, but hopefully that gets all lifted and we can fly him on a Learjet, you know, the morning of if we have to. So there's, and Mandelduck, we've got Sertubi, we've got a bunch of different games, Sat Stacker. So you'll be able to demo a lot of the games, see a lot of the games there. But the centerpiece is the gaming arena part of it, where we actually have 5v5 tournaments set up, and you can win different prizes. So throughout the day, there'll be some qualifying stuff for different games. Come and check that out. Also, we've got a very special activation by one of our very special skateboarding guests, which I can't say his name out loud right now because I don't have all the copy approved, but that's okay. And so there will be some fun stuff dealing with skateboards. Hopefully they're also at the conference, so come stop by and see it. We also have arcade games. So Ben Ark has typically set this up. UK stuff kind of hard as it, but what we do is we take cabinet arcade games, we rip open the backs, and we Lightning enable them. So you'll be able to play, you know, your traditional arcade games with sats as well. So that's pretty cool. And then we've got we'll be hanging out. We got our own little booth inside of this kind of area. And it's right next to the sponsor booth. You'll be able to see it. And then right behind us is the art gallery. It will be impossible to miss because there will be noise and fun and lights and all kinds of exciting stuff coming out of it.
Yeah.
And big shout out to Dez over at Mt. Gox / Lightning Labs for putting the programming together. So she is like the number
Desiree
one.
Dickerson.
Dez is great. And so she put it together and did so much work. Thank God she is very meticulous and detail oriented. It saved me so much energy. And I'll be helping her out as co-host of a lot of that stuff going on at the arena as well. And one last plug for this, we'll be streaming it all of the gaming arena stuff will be streamed on its own live stream on our Twitch channel. It's twitch.tv/Bitcoin, which I run as well. And we leave that open for the entire community. So like Rockstar Dev, Andrew Chow, Mint Gox, us, we do shows on there for Bitcoin Magazine. All of us are streaming through that handle or have the ability to stream through it. So if you're a Bitcoin gaming related person or you're doing like Bitcoin technical content or something like that, I'll put you on the Twitch stream, just ping me on Twitter or something like that. We'll get you out there. Like it's meant, we're the custodians of it. We're very public that we own such a great handle like /Bitcoin. We do not want to take advantage of it in a way where we hog it. Like it is for the community. So please definitely text me if you're already on Twitch or streaming stuff out.
Awesome. What do I need walking into the gaming area? Do I need a Lightning wallet with sats on it? Or can
we'll have sats. We'll have sats in a lot of cases for you. A Lightning wallet will be definitely good to have. I suggest like a ton of great wallets out there. Blue Wallet is the wallet that I normally use. Breeze, I absolutely love Breeze. Moon, you've got Zebedee, of course, go download their wallet. So, you know, there's going to be plenty of wallets there, and there will also be just random earning activity, like activations kind of throughout the conference as well to earn more sats.
And if I want to play games at home, I think they do this monthly tournament. What do I need there? Do I need a Lightning node or just a Lightning wallet on my phone?
No, just a Lightning wallet for all that. Again, so like we'll take Counter-Strike here. This is a good one with Infuse. You scan a QR code. It's attached to your wallet. You earn sats. That's it. So if you want to compete, sometimes you do need to put in some Bitcoin as like a kitty for the prize. But in a lot of cases, the channels or the tournaments are sponsored. And the fees get paid for by people like us or somebody else. We've only done it one other time, but a lot of people do like to sponsor this stuff.
Right. And let's show marbles. What's going on?
Yeah,
marbles.
So marbles is like I think it's definitely the most fun passion project I've ever had, and it's been our test bed for the Carrot app. So I've loved it. Marbles. It's a random number generator. It's a game made. It's Marbles on Stream. It's made by this Canadian developer squad. And the lead guy is this guy named Mike. And in fact, he didn't really know too much about Bitcoin until we started playing his game, attracting an audience, and giving out Bitcoin to the winners. And now Mike is, you know, doing it too. And they've got hundreds, maybe thousands of people, I guess, who stream on Twitch for this video game. And so we're trying to like see if we can't get, you know, him to integrate Bitcoin natively or like use the Zebedee and View stuff. So we're slowly approaching it. But Marbles is a lot of fun. We have a great community there. It's a random number generator. You go type in !! play and you might win some Bitcoin. It's that easy. And yeah. And so we also got right after the conference, we'll have a prediction bot that's also integrated into Twitter, and it will also be open source, so you can put it on your Twitch channel. It'll be a fun little prediction game. Predict the price in, you know, 30 minutes. Predict the price in 3 days, and it'll give you some sats for doing some fun predictions too.
Right. I'm really curious. So you were saying before that you were in media before you came to Bitcoin Magazine, and so what? What's the story there? How did you come to Bitcoin Magazine? And did you know what Bitcoin was before you started working at Bitcoin Magazine?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I first learned about Bitcoin from Brian and Coinbase back in 2012. I was living in the Valley at that point. I was part of a company that did Y Combinator. So I had a startup back then. And one of the guys on my team, who's now he's a cryptographer. Like he doesn't, I had a company back then that I had founded. He, in fact, is not that much into Bitcoin anymore, but he kind of turned me on to it. And one of the things, the original use case for Bitcoin that I always wanted was basically a dead man switch for publishers. So if you're in the middle of Iraq and you see something happen real bad and you need to say it, how do I put it on a blockchain and have it? And at this point, this is kind of how I thought of it. How do I put it somewhere and I leave the country and then it automatically disseminates this information, right? Some type of,
I get what you're saying,
I'm safe, right? And that's really what drew me to Bitcoin is like, oh, I kind of get it. Like it's a ubiquitous data layer for everything. And so in fact, it really has pushed me. I'm a little bit different, I think, than a lot of Bitcoiners. And the fact that I think Bitcoin is just so interesting and so big. there when I was, I'll tell it through a story. I was basically looking to change my career to get out of AdTech. And I said, all right, what am I going to go do? I'll go back maybe to this Bitcoin stuff. And I said, the other thing I do is a lot of like machine learning. I was in AdTech, right? So a lot of machine learning and AI stuff. And I ran, you know, a 65 person software development team, you know, $500 million company at this point. And I said, AI is interesting to me, but it will never be what it can be, which is Skynet. It can never be what it is until we fix sparse data, right? So even Facebook has sparse data. It's like Facebook has one of the largest data sets on the earth, but it's sparse data. It's very specific data about very specific things. And it doesn't communicate with Google, and it doesn't communicate with me, and it doesn't communicate with you. We have no control over it. They have complete control over it. It's completely centralized. And so we basically, I decided that until we have a database that all of us can globally share and support, the cost, the operations, the security, the infrastructure, that we will never have true AI. We'll never have a large enough data set. And so I said, all right, well, fuck it. I'll skip AI and I'll get right into the Bitcoin stuff. Because, you know, one of the earliest use cases for Bitcoin is proof of existence, Peter Todd, right? And this is an extremely, extremely exciting and interesting thing. Look at Microsoft and Ion. This is a proof of existence type thing, right? So we use it for decentralized identity. But in fact, you can use it for a lot of different stuff. Bitcoin is an anchor. Ethereum, open timestamps, like all of these are different proof of existence things. And we can use the Bitcoin blockchain to anchor and timestamp pieces of information, just hashes of things and Merkle hashes, roots of Merkle trees. And we can know that this happened at this time. Bitcoin is the best timestamping thing we've ever had, right? Bitcoin is money, it's timestamps, and it's identity. It's three different things. And I stole that from Daniel Buckner at Microsoft. I'm a big fan. We are only, for the most part, 99% of us are focused on Bitcoin. 99.8% of us are focused on Bitcoin as a money. I get it, but in my world, this is a little backwards, I think it had to become money first in order to secure the network. But net, freedom of content, freedom of information is more important than the freedom of money. But of course, they're tied together. If you don't have free money, then you can't have free content. Right. And I said free from like in a freedom way, not free as a monetary thing. And so we will see an evolution of Bitcoin, not only as a monetary layer for the entire net and the true value source and central value, right? Our clearinghouse, our repository, our central, whatever you want to call it, pick one of the fiat branded things here. And it will become the global database for truth of everything. Money is just one piece of thing. We're trading energy. We're trading hashes. Why can't it be anything? It can be anything we want it to be. So I'm excited for that kind of version of Bitcoin and that version of the world. And we don't need bigger blocks to do it. We don't need all this other stuff. You know, you go look. In fact, I got into a Twitter argument with Jimmy Wales during Mardi Gras last year. I was incredibly drunk, unfortunately. But it was what I was focused on that day was yelling at Jimmy Wales because a lot of Bitcoin SV folks had been saying, let's go put everything on the blockchain. Let's go stuff like actual data into a blockchain. I'm like, what a horrible idea this is. This is completely unscalable. This is the stupidest shit I've ever heard of. And I tried to explain to Jimmy, I was like, there are better ways and pointing to certain references. So hopefully I got my, I don't think I did. Jimmy's hard-headed, but like, hopefully we'll see a world where Bitcoin, I think, mutates in such an interesting, nobody understands Bitcoin. It will mutate into something that is magnitudes larger than even what we think it is today. And we think it's pretty dang cool, right? I mean, we think it's pretty big now. We haven't even scratched the surface because the possibilities are there. When you have a global, ubiquitous, shared database that everyone can run, that's some powerful shit. That is crazy.
Yeah. I'm trying to think through what are the implications of this global database of truth. And, you know, does this happen sort of like in very long time frames after we've completely monetized Bitcoin, or is this something that's happening in parallel?
And it's happening in parallel. So decentralized identity is a great place to kind of look and say, all right, like we're already using some components there. The decentralized group, identity group of people is an interesting group. The people who work on like the W3C standards, of course, Ion at Microsoft, which is the best Bitcoin-based implementation of anything that's decentralized identity. The Hyperledger people put a lot of time and energy into it as well. I think that that's kind of the first thing that we're seeing. So like verifiable credentials, which are basically attestations and validations, like of stuff like, hey, I can sign enough things with signatures. I can use signatures to sign and prove that I'm at least of drinking age. You don't need to know my date of birth, but I can tell you, yes, I belong in this bar. Right? That's like the great kind of classic example for why decentralized identity is good. I shouldn't have to give you my birth date. That's stupid. Can I be here or not? Like, yeah. All right, cool. Let me have a beer. And so you'll see a lot more of that kind of stuff. And then like anchoring information and truth. Truth is subjective, right? Like truth doesn't exist. And nothing is valuable unless it's been curated. So like those are kind of the two rules that I live by, right? If you painted the Mona Lisa, but no one ever saw it, it wouldn't be valuable, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter how good it is. No one sees it. It just doesn't matter. But also truth is incredibly subjective. But here's the thing. With truth being subjective, that's fine if we all have access to the same data. Because then we can validate that what I believe to be true out of that data set is being presented to me or being used in like algorithms or calculations. So let's take Google, for instance. Google has a centralized search engine. They also have a reputation engine or search engine for finding information in that database. Well, let's just take the database part out, figure out, let's ignore Bitcoin for a second. Let's just agnostically think about this. Let's rip the database out, make it public access where we can all write whatever we want to. Spam, I don't give a shit, right? Anything we want. But everyone has access to it and everyone can filter that however they want to filter it. So it doesn't matter if you put spam in there because I can hire someone. I can basically get someone to curate that information for me. And they can earn money for doing that and saying, yeah, the Mona Lisa was painted by XYZ. A lot of the people who have gone in this path have kind of gone into like certificates of authenticity side, which is me determining that this is truthful or not. And that's stupid. You can't do that. A centralized repository cannot actually be accurate all the time. And in fact, it doesn't matter what a third party means because that's only a single piece of information. What I really need is to have like 10 people tell me that this is true, or someone that I trust tell me this is true, or whatever, right? And so the reputation engine needs to communicate with this data layer, basically, that's completely open, and we need to separate those concerns a little bit so that Google doesn't have a monopoly on the data, but they can bring their own algorithm and have a closed algorithm for all I give a shit. As long as you can do some validations of some sort, that's fine. But I want to be able to write my own reputation engine. And I want to glue those two things together as well. So I'm going to take Google for curating 99% of my life, but 1% of my life that I know the most about because I'm an expert in my field, I want to curate that information. Or I want to trust my friends to curate that information. That, I think, is the world that we'll very, very slowly go to. And in fact, a lot of these concepts were developed in the 50s and 60s. Like I'm literally rehashing shit that people have been talking about for decades. Right. And this is a lot led by a guy named Ted Nelson, who worked on a thing called Project Xanadu, which was built on the idea that we should, the way I normally explain it is that we fucked up when we made copy and paste, copy and duplicate, not copy and reference, right? So if you think that if there is a SHA hash for every atom that exists in the universe today and will exist in the future, which there are, then everything's already been described before. Everything already has a name. You just don't know what it is until you see it. Okay? So if I know that everything past, present, and future has already been described and already has an identifier, then I can go on and start to describe it if I can validate what its existence is. And if I have it, then I know what it's called. But I don't know what it's named before I have it, right? So that idea of kind of condensing all the information around hashes, around unique identifiers, and coordinating around that was all something he worked on for years. And it was basically vaporware. Christopher Allen worked on this at some point, right? Chris, like a lot of people that you know or have heard of in the Bitcoin community have worked on these things. And to me, these are living legends. These are people who have, you know, whenever you look at Bitcoin, you're like, oh yeah, Bitcoin's, you know, a decade old, right? Mm. Fuck no, it's not a decade old. Everybody's been working for this. Everybody's life that's living, who's in technology, has been working to this moment that we're at right now. Everybody, whether they know it or not. So, you know, Bitcoin stands on the shoulder of giants, right? Like, and this theory of Bitcoin moving not only to a value, the internet of money, right? But the central repository for references and timestamping everything that's ever existed in the entire world. And it's a pretty big leap. Mm. But that's how big Bitcoin is. And my monitor should validate that you showed me the correct pixels when you show me an image. Why can't we today? My monitor, people could hack a monitor. Like, this is very true. Like, people could hack a monitor and could show me something completely different. People hack a browser all the time and fake stuff. Deep fakes exist. Like, all stuff is fake, can be fake, because we don't have any good way to validate that what I'm being told is correct. So I think we'll get there, though. I think Bitcoin can do it. So right. For everyone who's ever worried about Bitcoin fees, there's plenty of shit left to put on Bitcoin. Plenty of stuff. And we can batch all that too. We can do a lot of cool stuff like layer two lightning-ish type stuff for it.
Right. How do we think through the valuation of some of this kind of network that's being created after, you know, that's being built on the shoulders of giants and hundreds of years of work?
Yeah. How do you value
this system? I mean, now we're going from money to, you know, the global database of truth.
Yeah. And just to be clear, like it is the global database of how you derive truth, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not that the database isn't truthful at all. In fact, because everyone can write to the Bitcoin blockchain, it's permissionless. So I can spam it, right? So it's not that just because it's written down that it's truthful. It's that it's written down and now I can identify it. And if that same signature or that same person keeps signing a bunch of like bullshit, FUD, like lies, then I know not to trust them. And so we can develop reputation engine stuff on top of that. But we can only do that when we all have access to the same data. We can't make our own decisions if we don't have the same information. I mean, that's as simple as it is. So how do we value this, man? There is nothing more valuable than this. I mean, this is freedom. This is technology-enabled freedom, right?
Right.
That's what Bitcoin provides for us, is technology-enabled freedom. So there is no value. I mean, this is the state of humans exist. Like, it has to happen. Like, there's no other way out. Otherwise, we are doomed to live under a handful of rich people or powerful people for the rest of our lives, for billions of people,
right?
Forever. That's stupid. Who wants to do that? Nobody. Nobody wants that.
Yeah.
Well, somebody does, I'm sure.
Yeah, man. No one wants that. I don't know, but I would.
We don't want that. Others. Some people look. There's the guy from the Matrix. He decided to go back into the Matrix. Maybe that's what you're into.
Right. How has Bitcoin changed you?
It's a great question. I didn't care about freedom this much. I've been a libertarian side of things. I'm not. I don't think anyone's can ever really say libertarian is one of those things. Yeah, you can say you're libertarian or not, but it's really just like a loose gathering of random ideas that might fit me. I didn't care about freedom as much. I didn't think large enough. I didn't think that there could ever be like a freedom database, right? A freedom technology. And when presented with the idea, it's like anything in life. When you're presented with something that's of new size, new scale, new scope, you go, holy shit, what was I doing this entire time, right? It's like working hard. Like, I know a lot of people when they're young, I did this. I worked really hard. I worked really late hours, all this stuff. I didn't work smart, right? And that's what people tell you, don't work hard, work smart. Well, until you ever work smart, you don't know. You think you're working smart, right? Like, you don't know what the other side of that looks like. And so freedom, I think, was one of those things that, especially being an American, especially being a Southerner, I think Southerners have a weird predisposition for freedom, too. You know, take it or leave it, like, why that exists. But I think there's a lot of that there. And I was just, I don't know, shook by the size of Bitcoin when finally I figured out that I could, like, how to put my arms around Bitcoin. So, like everyone says, you can't really fully understand what the ramifications of this are. But I can start to put my arms around it. I can start to touch and I can start to feel it. And so when that, you start participating, you start building in it, you definitely have a different appreciation for freedom. And you have to be on the side of freedom all the time. Because if not, the technology will resist. The community will resist. Your bank account will resist, right? And until you put yourself above all that, like, to put freedom above all things, you just don't get it. And, you know, and I'm not like a huge gun nut. I didn't come from that side of things. I don't shoot deer. I like to fish. I didn't come from a family that was super affluent. I never had any, you know, outside of like shit that happens to everybody. I didn't really have a crazy upbringing or crazy life or crazy event that turned me, except for Bitcoin.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, maybe the South appreciates freedom more than the North, but I wonder who has more Bitcoin. I'm gonna bet on the North right now.
I'm gonna bet on the North too. Yeah. We'll say Silicon Valley,
right?
You know, some of the cool things about, you know, living out in the Valley, of course, is that you go and you meet people that are just like dudes you kind of meet and do stuff with and you have dinner with. And next thing you know, they're controlling the world somehow, right? Like, you know, I made an early bet on Facebook in my career when Facebook was 300 employees. That was a good bet. Like, I saw social media and I got it. And I don't resent social media today. I'm definitely less excited by it. I think we've seen it co-opted by the non-freedom people, right, in a lot of ways. So that's not like saying that. Yeah, I think that the platforms obviously have to centralize control. And so when I say not freedom people, I don't mean to call out a specific group of people or thoughts, but more so that the technology itself naturally has to centralize because of who they are and regulations and all this other shit. But net, I think it's still good. It's positive. There's so many people that I'm connected to and have ongoing relationships with that I've grown with that exposed me to new ideas and new things that, you know, I never would have seen unless I'd met those people and been able to keep up with them forever. So I'm still a big fan of like social media. Twitter's a great example of that. We wouldn't be connected, right? Mm-hmm. Like, without Twitter, without you coming on like some of our content, without doing podcasts together, without being able to communicate passively, right? I like some of your tweets earlier, right? It feels good, you know, but it is a bond because we can go, all right, there's a guy over there that has some shared interest. Like, let's see what he has to say. Let me learn from that person. Right. You don't need to put him on a fucking pedestal, but it's like, well, all right, what can I learn from Cedric? Right. Like, what's up over there? Right. So that's pretty cool. I like all this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Well, we met on Bitcoin Magazine Happy Hour.
Yeah. That's
pretty dope. And, you know, similar experiences where I've lived in Silicon Valley and worked there and lived a bit in the South, went to school there from New York. So I've lived there. It's interesting when you get the different perspectives, and even if you get to visit, just seeing, you know, how big the country is and how different it is, and all the places have something different to offer. I'm kind of curious, definitely for, you know, like our parting words, like, if there's anything else you're thinking about or advice you have for, you know, what we were talking about before, where the Bitcoiners were kind of really focused on money and maybe not really thinking, you know, in some of the things that you're kind of into, and, you know, definitely let people know where they could find you.
Yeah. So I would say ignore all the shit that I'm talking about. Being money is hard enough as it is, right? Like, eyes on the prize. Let's worry about this. Let's let the couple people who are freaks deal with this other stuff. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about me. Right. We've got a long, long way to go, right? How long did we try to get video on the internet to work, right? I mean, it's a long, long road. So I think the technologies are there. I think the concepts are there. I think the concepts have been around, again, 50, 60 years. But unless you're willing to, and I think I'll say this for basically any developer that's working on Bitcoin or like core side of Bitcoin, not like the app side, apps like wallets, maybe even, you got to be prepared to give yourself up to Bitcoin. Like you have to consume your life with it to understand it in order to wield it correctly. So stick with money. I think that's where the most traction is. I think that's where the most use cases are going to be driven. I think people like privacy, money privacy, like that's going to give us great stuff like over the years, like whatever, however we evolve it. So that's cool. I'm totally in for that. Yeah. Just give yourself up to Bitcoin. You'll be fine, right? If you're a builder. And it's a lot of fun. And like, there's a great community around it too. And if you ever get bored, you can always bail out and go back to your normal life.
Yeah.
They'll take you back. Yeah.
I find giving myself up to Bitcoin is just learning patience. Hearing your thoughts makes me so excited and I'm just ready for all of it. And I just kind of like, we're here, we've drawn our conclusions and I just want it all to happen right away. And the only way to deal with that is to keep learning and keep growing, keep stacking, and getting to talk to people like yourself. Definitely let people know where they can find you, man. This has been so dope.
Yeah, so two ways you can find me. A, come find me in person at the Bitcoin 2021 conference. I know you're going to be there. All you people listening to the show will be at this conference. And if you're not, you know, hit me up on Twitter. Pretend like you were there. We'll tweet back and forth during it. And if you want to find me on the Twitter, which is basically the only way I keep a public persona, it's flip_BTCMag, or come join me on the Twitch channel at twitch.tv/Bitcoin. I'm there on Tuesday and Thursday nights. I tweet out about it. You can come find me.
Oh, man, another app.
Man, the number of apps and things and... Oh my God, it's so much. But Twitch is really cool. If you've never actually spent on, like, I'm not going to call you old. I'm going to say everyone who's under the age or over the age of 25, which we both fit in this camp.
Yeah.
You probably haven't used Twitch very much. Twitch is fucking cool. It's programmable. It's made for Bitcoin. Like, I have a much longer rant. We'll have to do another episode one day, and I'll just tell you about how cool Twitch is for Bitcoin and why we are the future. Bitcoin games, Bitcoin enabled games plus Twitch is the future of gaming. And 99% of this world will earn their first Bitcoin, not buy it. And if they earn it playing video games, that's fucking rad. So I'm excited for, I like Twitch. We should talk about Twitch sometime.
You got it, bro. I'll definitely have you back. This has been so fresh and dope. Thank you so much, Flip.
All right, Seth. Thanks, bud.
My main man, Flip from Bitcoin Magazine. On an exciting day in Bitcoin, 10K candles, and the implications of a decentralized, verifiable, global database that derives truth right here on the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. And thank you for listening. If you dig the chats, subscribe, drop a dope 5-star review, and share a link to the podcast with your friends and family. Keep your head in the game, keep learning, and keep stacking. This is Cedric. Peace.